Because time is pressing. We're like the mummy. We've been pressed for time, you know. And so we have to keep moving on this. But various interpretations have been given to the book. I believe that it is a literal picture of a decision that this shepherd girl from up in Issachar had to make. And are we on? There we go. Solomon and his crew had gone into the northern part of Palestine, and some of his people had run across, as we'll see later in the book, run across this girl as she was on her way to check on the fruit trees, and they had brought her to Solomon because they were struck by her beauty and her vibrancy and all of that. And she came, and we had opened the story with the shepherd girl and the ladies of the court talking. And then we had a scene where Solomon came on the scene, and he made his first overture to her that we have recorded. This may not be the first time he saw her, but this is the first of the love overtures that he makes to her. And really what he promised her was, we'll give you gold and silver. We're going to give you the riches and all of that. And then the girl talks about the fact that she's got a shepherd boyfriend, and that they are deeply in love, and that he is an outstanding young man. And in chapter 2, verse 7, she turns to the ladies of the court and says, I adjure you, I beg you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose would be the gazelles, or the hinds, the rabbits of the field, that you stir not up nor awake love until it please. Don't press me to get married. That's where we closed last time. We were telling it in the form of a play being presented, and I think that's really what the picture of it is. And with that, the curtain closes. When the curtain opens on verse 8, the girl and the ladies of the court, the daughters of Jerusalem, are on the scene. Solomon is not there. And she is reminiscing out loud to these women about her shepherd boyfriend. And in the process of it, she talks a bit, and then it comes in with what he has said to her. And either she is saying that, or if you want to really get creative on the thing, there could be a voice from off stage speaking for him. We don't see him. He's not on the scene yet. He's out of the picture, but we hear what he has said to her in the past. And this is all to create the image of their relationship together and her love for him and his for her. With verse 8 in chapter 2, the girl is saying, the voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh in at our windows. He glanceth through the lattice. Sounds like he's a peeping Tom. No. It's picturing that when he comes to see her, he's timid, he's bashful, and he comes to the wall and he stops and then he goes to the window and all of that, working his way to speak to her. And then in verse 10, here is what he is saying to her. Now, he's not there, but she's remembering what he has said to her, or a voice from off stage is saying it to it. My beloved spake and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the singing of birds is come. And the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree ripeneth her green figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth their fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, that art in the cleft of the rock, in the covert of the steep place, let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. This is what she's remembering of him and things that he has said to her. Solomon has offered her, stay with me, silver and gold. Here's what the boy is saying. Come with me. Go up into the hills. It's springtime. The birds are singing. The flowers are blossoming. Come and we'll see the... What is he offering her? The common beauties of nature. Not riches, not silver, not gold, not all of that. But these things of the common world. But he appeals to her, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. Let me hear, see thy countenance. Countenance. Let me hear thy voice. Sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. The boy is timid, but he's not tongue-tied. And in the story, God has him saying things that are really attractive and are really nice to the girl, but it's usually in a private setting, away from everybody else. Then in verses 15 through 17, there are some difficult parts in any interpretation of this. But in verses 15 through 17, I think it's the girl speaking again. And she says, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards. For our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth his flock among the lilies. Until the day be cool and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bether. This expression, take us the foxes, the little foxes, is possibly tied to what the village people would have commonly done in the springtime. When the new blossoms are coming out on the vines, grapevines probably. As the new blossoms are coming out on the vines, some have suggested that the little foxes, not the old ones are wary, but little foxes would come out of the woods and come into the vineyards and nibble the fresh growth and spoil the vine. And that to prevent that, while the grown folks are out doing their labors at a time, they would have the children go down and play around the vineyard. And that would keep the foxes scared out and keep the animals out of it so that they didn't spoil it. That may be an illusion. She may be reflecting on their youth when they, as children, would have played among the vines. And then she makes the parallel that our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine and I am his. What was the boy doing? What does it say he was doing? He feedeth His flock among the lilies. Note that. She knew what He was doing. What was He doing? He's working. He's busy. He's not just sitting at home, but He's out doing something. We're going to see that they found her as she was busy. She was on her way to get the to see about the fruit trees. So then in verse 17, she says, "Until the day be cool and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved. Be thou like a roe or young hart on the mountain of..." That's just a beautiful statement of whole things as they are. I love you. I care for you. Now with that, curtain closes. Then when it opens again, the girl is on the stage with the ladies of the court. And she is telling them about a dream that she had. And who does she dream about? She's going to dream about her shepherd boyfriend. But listen to the dream, starting in chapter 3. "By night on my bed, I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. I said, I will rise now and go about the city. In the streets and in the broadways, I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, Saw ye him whom my soul loveth? It was but a little while that I passed from them when I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house, into the chamber of her that conceived me." Question. Do your dreams always make sense? Do you ever have dreams that are off the wall and, you know, things that... You may fit into a pattern or something, but oddball things happen that just are unrealistic. Here was her dream. She dreamed that she got up in the midst of the night and went out in the city looking for the shepherd boyfriend. Well, he wouldn't have been out there under normal circumstances, but she's out looking for him. She sees the watchman and asks them, "Have you seen him?" And then she goes on down her way and she finds him. And she embraces him. By the way, there are going to be several references, already have been some, to their embracing. But there are going to be several references to her purity. Keep that in mind. Keep the work in mind. Keep the purity in mind. She embraces him in her dream. And where does she take him? She takes him into her mother's house, into the chamber where her mother gave birth to her. Took her to his mother's bedroom. Question. What is the most intimate place in a house? The bedroom. And particularly the parents' bedroom. That bespeaks intimacy. And in her dream, she's taking the boy into the bedroom. Nothing immoral about this. It's her dream. And she has found the boy she loves, and she takes him into the room. By the way, this is an aside that doesn't cost anything. I have seen situations and talked with people that had situations where parents would let a teenage girl have her boyfriends over and let them go back in the bedroom to watch the TV in her bedroom. Not at my house. Not at my house. You might say, well, but they go out in a car and they're in private in a car. And that's right. And all of us know the dangers of the car, too. But the bedroom bespeaks intimacy. I'll get off that soapbox, okay? She has told this dream. And then again she says to the ladies of the court, verse 5, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awake love until it please. And with that, curtain closes. Curtain's closed. And for the audience's sake, you're the audience. Some people come out in front of the curtain. We're going to create a scene without showing it on the stage. We don't have the equipment to do all the stage work on this. But we're going to create a scene. There are some guys standing in front, or people, maybe men and women, standing in front of the curtain. And one of them says, verse 6, who is this coming up from the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the powders of the merchants? And somebody else speaks up and says, behold, it's the litter of Solomon. 70 mighty men are about it, of the mighty men of Israel. They all handle the sword and are all expert in war. Every man has his sore upon his thigh because of the fear of the night. And then this explanation is given. King Solomon made himself a palanquin of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom thereof of gold, and the seat of it of purple, the midst of it being paved or inlaid with love from the daughters of Jerusalem. Then somebody else speaks up and says, go forth, O you daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon, with the crown wherewith his mother hath crowned him in the day of his espousals, in the day of the gladness of his heart. You know what we're doing? We're making a transition. These people are standing in front of the curtain, and they're seeing something back there that you can't see. But they're seeing it, and they begin to run. Who is this coming in from the wilderness? Solomon has been up in the north in the wilderness area. He's coming back to Jerusalem. And as he's coming into Jerusalem, his entourage is in a procession. 60 men of war. I told you that he carried a whole entourage with him, and he had 60 soldiers, special ones that had their swords, and they were expert in war. They were ready to defend him if needed. They're leading in the procession. And Solomon is on a palanquin. You know what a palanquin is? It's a chair of state. Have you ever seen the pictures of men with things on their shoulders carrying a platform that has a nice chair on it, and royalty, or the wealthy, sitting on the chariot, and the servants are carrying them? Have you seen that? That's what this is. Solomon is being carried into the city in a procession. What's he got on his head? What's it say? Crown. Crown would be heavy. Do you think he would wear a crown all the time? Of course not. But he's coming into the city. The people of the city are seeing it, the entourage as they're coming in. So he's in his royal finery being carried on the palanquin with his crown on his head. And everybody's saying, oh, look, it's Solomon coming back. All of that to make the transition. We have just moved from Issachar up in the north. I'm not working. Give me the next slide. We have moved down to Solomon's palace. So when the curtain opens, rather than being in the tent up in Issachar, we're in the palace itself. And the girl has come with him. Somebody's going to say, wait a minute. If she's in love with that shepherd boy, why did she go down there with Solomon? The reason is because if she had not gone, the class would already be over and we've got two more sessions that we've got to do. No, God is painting the picture that this girl has got a heavy decision to make. So they're in Jerusalem and in the palace. And chapter 4 begins this way. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thine eyes are as doves behind thy veil. Thy hair is like a flock of goats. We've already talked to her about looking like a horse. Now, thy hair is like a flock of goats that lie along the side of Mount Gilead. Thy teeth are like a flock of ewes that are newly shorn, which are coming up from the washing, whereof every one hath twins, and none is bereaved among them. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet. Thy mouth is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate behind thy veil. Thy neck is like the tower of David, builded for an armory, whereon hang 1,000 bucklers, all the shields of the mighty men. Thy two breasts are like two fawns that are twins of a roe, which feed among the lilies. Solomon is making his second recorded appeal to her, and he is bespeaking her beauty. Her hair, like a flock. Imagine the side of Mount Gilead and a whole flock of goats lying along it. If they're lying down together, it'd give you a wavy look, maybe like the hair. Teeth, like pearls, like ewes that had just been washed, the little white thing. And for every one you've got on one side of your head, you've got one on the other side of the head. None's missing. She's got all of her teeth. She's beautiful. Her temples, the whole beauty of her, her breast. And then he says, your neck is like a tower of David. A tower of David was a tower in the wall in Jerusalem, and apparently the soldiers came and hung their shields on it. From a distance, a whole group of shields hang would be like a necklace around a lady's neck. So Solomon is giving an appeal to her for her beauty. And she answers him in verse 6. Until the day be cool and the shadows flee away, I'll get me to the mountain of myrrh, to the hill of frankincense. So she is remembering her shepherd boyfriend. Probably the curtain closes again. And when it opens, she's on the stage, but the voice from off stage of the boy, the shepherd boy, comes. And this is going to be put in contrast with what Solomon has just said to her. And here's what the shepherd boy says to her. Thou art all what she's remembering. He's not there. He's in Issachar. But she's remembering this, and the voice is coming for the audience's sake. Thou art all fair, my love, and there is no spot in thee. Here's the first reference to her purity. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride, with me from Lebanon. Look at from the top of Amana, from the top of Senir and Hermon, from the lion's den and the mountains of the leopards. Thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my bride. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain of thy neck. How fair is thy love, my sister, my bride. How much better is thy love than wine, and the fragrance of thine oils than of all manner of spices. Thy lips, O my bride, drop the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. A garden shut up. Here's another reference to purity. A garden shut up is my sister, my bride. A spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Thy shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with precious fruits, henna and spikenard plants, spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense and myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices. Thou art a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, and flowing streams from Lebanon. Like I say, he's not tongue-tied. He makes a beautiful speech, but what's it about? Come to the mountaintops. Look out at the beauty of nature. You're like the beautiful flowers that are blooming. You're like the spices. You're a lovely thing. And you're like a garden that has been shut up, a fountain that has been sealed. You're innocent. You're pure. And then in verse 15, she probably responds to that offstage comment by the boy, where he's talked about the beauty, her beauty and all. And she speaks up. Where is she? She's down in Jerusalem. Where is he? He's up in Issachar. And she says, "Awake, O north wind, and come thou south. Blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his precious fruit." She's saying, in response to his beautiful talk, she says, "Come and see me. I want you." The first part of chapter 5 is the most difficult part for me to interpret. And several authors suggest this, and I think probably rightly, that this first verse, a long verse, is possibly a commentary by the writer. Solomon has made his appeal. The boy has told of his love. She's expressed her love to him. And the writer says, "I am come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh with my spices. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends. Drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved." It may be an author's comment saying, "Yeah, you're in love. You all should be together. You should drink this wine and enjoy each other." The curtain closes. When it opens again, the girl is on the in the palace with the ladies of the court. And she's telling another dream that she's had. Verse 2 of chapter 5. "I was asleep, but my heart waked. It's the voice of my beloved that knocketh. Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled." Here again, purity. "For my head is filled with dew." He's out in the night, and the dew has formed in his hair and all that. And she speaks back. This is a dream now. It doesn't make sense. Here's a dream. She speaks back and she says, "I have put off my garment. How shall I put it on? I've washed my feet. How shall I defile them? I'm already in bed. My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door. That's the way you would open the door, is reach through and lift the latch from the inside. And my heart was moved for him when he put his hand in. I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with... She was so nervous that she's perspiring and her fingers are dripping. My fingers were with liquid myrrh upon the handles of the bolt. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. Dreams don't always make good sense. My soul had failed me when he spake. I sought him, but I couldn't find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen that go about the city found me. They smote me. Watchmen wouldn't beat her. They're out to protect. But this is a dream, remember? They smote me and wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my mantle from me. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell him I am sick from love. Let me ask you a question. Is this girl in love? Very much so. She loves that shepherd boy. So the ladies of the court say to her in verse 9, you tell us all this stuff about that guy? Verse 9, what is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved that you do so adjure us? What is this guy? Tell us about this guy. And in verse 10, she starts telling about him. You just listen to her description of her shepherd boyfriend. My beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head is of the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves beside the water brook, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, as bed of sweet herbs. His lips are as lilies dropping liquid myrrh. His hands are like rings of gold set with beryl. His body is like ivory work overlaid with sapphires. His legs are like pillars of marble set upon sockets of fine gold. His aspect, his overview, is like he like great Mount Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. This girl's in love. And this boy is really an outstanding. So they ask her in verse 6, or chapter 6, whither is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest? Where is thy beloved turned him that we may seek and see? I want to see this guy. And she says in verse 2, my beloved is gone down to his garden, to the bed of spices, to feed in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine. He feedeth his feet among the flock, or he feedeth his flock, pardon me, among the lilies. Where was the boy? He was at work. She knew where he was. Keep a note of that. All right. In chapter 6, the curtain closes. When the curtain opens again, Solomon is on the stage with her. They're in the palace. And Solomon makes another love appeal. Thou art fair, O my love, as Tirzah, comely as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Turn away thine eyes from me, for they have overcome me. Thy hair is like a flock of goats that lie alongside, yet thy teeth are like... Have you heard this line before? Thy teeth are like a flock of ewes which are come up from the washing, whereof everyone hath twin. None is bereaved. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate behind the same old line that he's using. But I love verse 8. There are 80 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. My dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one of her mother. She's the choice one of her that bare her. I'm going to stop right here. Make an observation. Then we'll pick up right here Wednesday night. Why doesn't the girl just send Solomon away and go to the shepherd boy? Stop and think about it a minute. It's the king appealing to her. Boy, that's impressive enough. But listen to what the king is saying. He said, honey, I've got 60 queens, 60 wives. I've got 80 concubines. And there are young, unmarried women available without number, any number that I could have. But there's nobody like you. I need you. From my experience and observation, there's no appeal that a man makes to a woman greater than, I need you. She's made to be a supplement to man. And when the king says to the girl, I've got all these other women, but there's nobody like you. You're the only one of you, dog. If your mother had another child like you, I'd get her. But you're the only one. I need you. She's got a decision to make. Come back Wednesday night.